So we had spent a number of weeks on the core sugya of Hanan, of Chaticha Nazas Nevela, the sugya of Tipas Chalav, which had a lot to do with Chaticha Nazas Nevela, with the idea, again, that when Basar and Chalav mix, so they both together become a Chepta di Surah, and if that mixture of Basar and Chalav, well, one was not Batal Bashishim to the other, they become Aser. If they then, let's say, fall into a larger pot of Chalav or a larger pot of Basar, you're going to need to move out to the whole initial mixture, because they're both, we're not just going to say, well, let a little bit of Chalav, and now it has to be Nizbatel and all of the Basar. If the Tam Chalav doesn't reach all the rest of the Basar, the Mutter, no. Even the Tam, the original piece of Basar is a Chepta di Surah, Chaticha Nasas Nevela, the original kosher piece of meat becomes Treif. And I need to move out to that big piece of meat also, not just the Tipas Chal. So, and then in Sif Dalet, we saw the Machlokas Rishonim, and we are Machmir, that we say Chaticha Nasas Nevela even B'Sha'ar Isurim. Say Chaticha Nasas Nevela even B'Sha'ar Isurim. Not only milk falling into meat, but even... chaylev falling into kosher meat. So we say the initial chatichas basar didn't have shishim against the drop of chaylev or the drop of chazir. So they say chaticha nasas nevela is min rabbanon. That's machlokas of Rabbeinu Ephraim and others. Chanan b'shar yisurim. At the end of Sif Dalet, the Rama started laying out the limitations on Chanan, on Chaticha Nasas Nevela. At the very end, you talk about what case do you say Chaticha Nasas Nevela, what case not. It has to be a Nisin as Tam. It can't just be that things blended together. Yavish doesn't lend up to Chanan. And the final point that the Rama made, at the end of Sif Dalet, in line with this idea that not every time that there's Iser is there Chanan, Yavish B'Yavish may require bitl. If you don't have bitl, it's aser, but you don't say charan. It has to be a bli of the food into something else. The Rama says, it has to be a bli of a food into a food. It cannot be the bli of a food into a kli. It's true. It's true. We'll get to this officially in the next Simon Sadi Gimel, about pots becoming fleshik, or pots becoming milchik, or pots becoming treif. It's true that a pot, a kedeir, can be bolea, tam, a flavor, it takes that on. But that doesn't mean that you can say chanan on the pot itself. The pot itself is not a food. The pot itself, so even if, what does that mean? That means that if I fried a kezias of chaylev, or kezias of bas b'chalav, in a pan, so even though the pan is not shishim as much as it's another volume of shishim kezaisim, if you know that you had just one kezias of tarfus in the pan, so and then you put later, you clean it out, then you put kosher food in the pan, so you only need shishim in the food connected the kezias. You do not need shishim in the food connected the volume of the whole pan. Practically speaking, usually you do need shishim connected the volume of the entire pan. That we'll get to more in Simon Sadi Gimel. And that bekula, usually the rule is bekule mesha'arinan. You are mesha'er shishim in the food. You're going to require shishim food connected kule, connected the volume of the entire pot or pan. But that's a practical consideration. It's because usually I have no idea. I've been using this pan for milchiks for years. I know how much the max amount of milchiks that was nivla, who knows? So usually, or even use it once or twice, you don't really pay attention to how much food there was, how much iser there was, or how much milchik or fleishik. So usually, as a rule of thumb, the kuli misharinu, because I'm not really sure how much of whatever it is, milchik, fleishik, treif, this pan has been bolea, but clearly, from a point of view of the simplest physics, clearly it can't be more bulia in the pot than the very volume of the pot. Obviously, it's much less. There's a rule of thumb, we say, bekule misharin. But that's, again, a practical consideration, because we're not really sure how much bulia there is. So we say just imagine as though the whole pan were chalav, or the whole pan were basr, or the whole pan were chalav. But if I know how much there was, if I only use it for, you know, I always use this pan for power, but once I use it for milch, I know exactly how much it was, because I had a piece of string cheese, and I cut it in half, and then I diced it up, and that's what I put in. That was the milchitz. I was making eggs, I put in half of a, so then I know. So if that stick of string cheese is an ounce, I know exactly I had half an ounce, or whatever it is. Okay, so that's usually the din in Sadi Gimel, that kalim can be boleya, milchitz, fleishik, treif, what have you. In general, as a practical matter, we say you need shishim, connected the whole volume of the pan, bekuli misharinim, because we're not sure how much was nivla. But if I know I only use it for milchix or fleishix or treif, whatever it is, once, and I know there was only kazais, I know it was only half an ounce, whatever, so then that's all you need. We don't say chanan on the pan. We don't say that because I fried one kazais of bacon in the pan, now I need shishma connected the whole pan. No, I need shishma connected the kazayas of bacon that got nivla into the pan. Again, that's also really an expansion. That's also a rule of thumb. I fried a kazayas of bacon in the pan. It didn't all go into the pan. I took the piece of bacon out afterwards. Maybe it lost a little bit of volume. And so that's also sort of this along lines of bekuli mishari. Ki'ilu, the most that could have gone in is the whole volume of whatever it originally was. Okay. So we don't say chanan on the pan. So it's in reference to that with a tur and shulchan aruch, then pick up with a sort of an exception to that. We don't say chanan on the pan, but maybe sort of we could. Maybe we're not going to say chanan on the pan, but maybe you could say chanan on, we just said before that usually we have no idea how much material is in the pan. We've been using this pan, it's not the first time we're using it. I've been using this pan for weeks, for months, for years. There's all sorts of other food, kosher food, power of a food, but food that's been nivla into the dofen hakadera. I can't observe how much is there, but I assume it's, you know, plenty has been nivla over time. And maybe, again, maybe it's a power of a pot and everything is nivla up until this time was power, or maybe it's a fleishik pot and everything has been nivla up until now is fleishik. So I assume there's a lot of fleishik ablius in the dofen hakadera. So maybe there you could say chanan. Maybe I don't say chanan on a new pan, but maybe I should say chanan on an old pan. One kazayas of milk was nibbled into the pan, but it's an old pan. And forget about chanan b'shari sur. In any case, milk and kapar, you don't say chanan. It's a flesh of kapat. A flesh of kapat and some milk has got nibbled into it. Ooh. So then maybe you have to start thinking about chanan. Now this issue comes up in a larger context. And this issue comes up in the context of what happens when things splatter from the outside. And it's interesting that this comes up in the context of a Gemara in Zvachim. So we'll come back to the question of chanan of a little bit of milk to the rest of the blias, fleishik blias in the fleishik pot. But let's back up a little bit. Now that we've set the stage, let's back up a little bit and appreciate the Gemara that it's rooted. Appreciate the Gemara. I'm sorry. Appreciate a Gemara that the Rebal HaTosas already seems to have raised, and later Bali HaTosas and other Chachmi Ashkenaz were raising. So let's just back up to see that Gemara. It's in the same Seder as Maseches Chulin, but it's in the non-Chulin. It's in the Kachem. By definition, Chulin means not Kachem. So it's in the Kachem part of Seder Kachem, as opposed to Maseches Chulin. In a very intriguing nook or cranny within the halachas of Karbanos, this 11th parak of Zvachim, parak Dam Chatas, is concerned with dinim that appear in a pasuk. Parshat Tzav, the details, fascinating, sort of like a little world unto itself. The Mishnah, there's a whole parak about how you clean up from a carbon. Two dinim the pasuk has xeris hakasav. Number one is that if you have dam chatas, that the blood from a carbon chatas accidentally gets sprinkled on a piece of clothing, on a garment, it's a special din to rinse it. Kibbutz, you have to wash out the blood in Makom Kadosh. It's a fascinating din. A mitzvah of doing laundry, a very specific type of laundry, in a very specific stain, and a specific laundry in a very specific place. So kibbutz dam chatos is a mitzvah daraisa, a fascinating din. Then the other din the psukim they're present is merika ushtifa. I have carbon meat, so I cook it, I grill it, what have you. I prepare it. That's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to eat it raw. As a matter of fact, Mishnais and Zvachim talk about dafki. It comes to both in Zvachim and Chulin. The Lamashul Gdula is supposed to, particularly the Chelek HaKonim, but probably all Karbanos, have to be eaten in a regal, highly dignified way. Certainly not raw and not cheap either. You have to do it in a beautiful, elegant way. So you're making elegant food, you're using pots and pans. So what are you going to do with those pots and pans? You say, well, I don't know, I'll wash it out. You have to kasher it, Torah says. You have to kasher it. And part of the reason why you have to kasher it is because every kasher carbon becomes treif. Because every carbon has an expiration date. Kachem lasts, expire the beginning of the end of the night, or the middle of the night, b'drabbanan. You have the kachakachra nechel yom v'layla. You have the day that you bring them, which may be morning or afternoon, and then into the night. And Mishnah, the first Mishnah Shas tells us that many tanam of the opinion that midrabbana and you don't have all night. You got to finish your wrap up by chatzos. And then kachim kalim, the lower level karbanas, the less holy karbanas, generally, with the exception of carbon toda el nazir, generally you have 2 days and a night. But whatever it is. A day and a night, or a day and a night, the next day as well. Sooner or later, the carbon expires. And anything that we left over beyond that point is no sir. If there is any meat that's left over, it's an iser in the Chumash, the iser to be moser, it's a lav. You're not supposed to allow it to become, not supposed to eat everything up. And if you do, now that you violate the lav of no sir, but then you have to burn whatever is no sir is possible, it's forbidden to eat it, you got to burn it. So the question is, I'm a good Jew, I'm going to seek to make sure that I eat up all the meat. But there's going to be bleus in the pot. So at the time, it was kosher and holy. But a couple days later, isn't it no sir? So the Torah says you have to kosher the pots and pans, and in a very specific way. And that's a mitzvah of merika shtifa in the Beis HaMikdash, in hot water and in cold water, it's merika and shtifa. I think I mentioned in other contexts, or I heard from me many, many years ago from Nachum Ganek of Englewood and of the OU, he thought that the fact that we have the minhag to rinse kalim in cold water after we kasha, then maybe that's a zeichel mikdash to this din. In the Beis HaMikdash, it's a real din daraisa, mrika and shtifa, which we in Chazal, Gemara in Zvachim tells us means hot and then cold. So we do it as perhaps zeichel mikdash. Okay, be that as it may. So the Mishnayos talk about the Mishnah Tzadi Gimel talks about some of the dinim of kibbutz dam chatas. What sorts of begadim warrant this? So it could be cloth, it could be leather, and then the Mishnah says that you only need kibbutz b'makom hadam. Only b'makom hadam. That you don't have to rinse, you don't have to launder the entire bag, you just have to get the stain removal. You don't have to launder the whole thing. Just remove the stain. The Gemara raises a question, Tzadi, Hamid, Bey, the Mishnah's pivot, the Tai Gimel already, and then even more so, Tzadi, Hey, the Mishnah's pivot from Damchatas to this din of Mariko Shtifa. Agav, we'll get to it. We may come back to the Mishnah on Tzadi Hayim Beis, because the Mishnah on Tzadi Hayim Beis says that Mariko Shtif applies whether you cooked the Kli in this pot or you cooked it elsewhere and poured it in. Whether it's a Kli Rishon or Iri Kli Rishon, that really leads to very long tosis that wraps all the way down Tzadi Hayim Beis and goes on to Tzayvav Amid Aleph about Iri Kli Rishon in general, Iri Kli Rishon in Bas B'Chalav, Iri Kli Rishon in Shabbos. This is a very important Mishnah. The question, I'm not sure what the Mishnah is saying. I mean, the Mishnah says the Mikra Shtif applies even by Iri Kli Rishon. Does that mean that Iri Kli Rishon is always like Kli Rishon, or does that mean No, this is a special exception, a special unique din in kachin that's not relevant elsewhere. So that's a long tesis. Okay, we already dealt with the Sama and Simin Tzayaf. Okay, then there's a sort of similar phenomenon on Sadi Vavan Beis in the Gemara. It's a very colorful opening. Gemara has a shock of Ataria, but the Gemara gives a little bit of, in this case, a little bit of the background. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, see, Yitzchak Rabbi Yehuda used to learn in Rabbi Bar Chama's yeshiva, and then he left and went to Rav Sheshes. So then one day he meets up his old Rebbe, Rabbi Bar Chama, who gives him a hard time. Why did you leave? Is it because you're a Bal Gaiva? You think you're so chashev, you're a duke, you're a king, etc. See, he says, he's never sure how to say this, but, you know, I like his Derech HaLimud more. He says, you give Svaras. So he gives Bekiyas. So you give Svaras, it's very nice, and then you have a kash, and the whole Svaras are up. So Rav Sheshes, every time I ask him a question, just give me Svaras. He says, I have a Brisa. Boom. So even if I find other Brisa, it's against, okay, but then it's the Machlekes Brisas. But with you, you give me a Svaras, but okay, but then a week later I find the Brisa against you. And the whole shear went out the window. So Rav Chama says, try me. So again, he says, they ask me a Shaila. So what's the Shaila? Shaila is... The Shaila is, how Rika Shtifa? Say, I had a big pan, and I only had one small piece of meat. Say, I didn't use the whole pan for the piece of meat. It was in one corner of the pan. So I have to Rika Shtifa the whole pan or just the piece of meat? So Rabbi Chama says, Pashat. Avada only that one part of the pan. Why? Because the Mishnah says that Dam Chatish only do kibos on that B'makam Hadam. It's the same thing here. There he goes again. He's giving a svar. He says, well, do you have a source for it? He says, I actually have a brisa against you. He says, no one have a svar against you. Ritzak Bar Yehuda says to his erstwhile Rebbe, Rabbi Chama, in Saivam of Beis, he says, the second point he makes is it's against a brisa. Tanya. We have a brisa that format I think you find most frequently in Seder Zerah, you find it elsewhere as well. The brisa starts contrasting these two, Dam Chatas and Rikur Shtifa. They have a lot of dinim in common, but the brisa is going to list the ways in which this one is mochamer than that one, ways in which that one is mochamer than this one. And on that list is that Bishul mixes akli tarm rikur shtifa kol akli mashen kin baza. The brisa says beferish. What's true about the din of the Mishnah Tzai Gimel Beis that said about dam chatas? They only require kibus in that one spot. That is not the case when it comes to rikur shtifa. One of the chumras rikur shtifa over dam chatas rikur shtifa applies to the whole kli. Wow. And that was the second kasha that Ritzuk Bar Yehuda had against Rabbi Chama's argument. The second one is from a source. The first one is Misvara. He says, why are you so sure that they're comparable? Amalei mi dami, damla mifapeya, bishol mifapeya. The blood doesn't spread. I mean, it maybe spreads a little bit, but you can see how far it spread. And there could be some capillary action, but it doesn't spread to the whole baguette. You saw it. Wait. Special here. So I wash off. If I wash off whoever is visible, I'm done. But here, was it help to wash off the one spot where the piece of steak was sitting? But the flavor is going to spread. Bishul mifapeya. So that's what. Again, those are the two kashas. Number one, I don't understand your svara. Number two, it's demonstrably incorrect because the brisa says otherwise. So, and then the end of the Gemara is interesting. The Rav Bar Chama replies to him, well, itanya, itanya. The last narrow line inside of the base. He said, look, if it's a brisa, it's a brisa. I'm not going to argue the brisa. I had a svara. I guess I was wrong. The time am I, and what's the reason? The Gemara answers, what's the reason for what? What's the reason that indeed you need Mrika Shtifa B'chalakli? The language of the pasuk in describing the scenario we need to make a shtifa is bichli nechoshes bushal. I believe that they're darshan of the letter beis. If it's cooked within the kli, so it sounds like even if just a little part of the kli was used, it's already enough to warrant the full din of merika ushtifa. So that's the Gemara. So the Gemara has this one line, one particular line that Rishonim quote the most, is that one line of Bishul Mifapeah. The point of it to Bar Yehuda, made to his erstwhile Rabbi Rabbi Chama, look, if you cook something in a pot, the flavor is going to spread. So that led the Ravan, the Mordechai, the Beis Yosef quotes the very lengthy, the Mordechai is not in Zvachim. There is no Mordechai in Zvachim, because the Mordechai, like the Rosh, like the Rif, wrote on those Masechtas, which are Lach HaLamaisa. So here's one Gemara, one line in the Masechtas Zvachim, relevant to Halacha, that gets quoted in the Mordechai back in Masechtas Chulim. The Mordechai quotes a lot from the Rishonim, and that then forms part of the basis for the Tur and the Beis Yosef, and from there the Shulchan Aruch. So the Ravan, one of the early German Rishonim, so he says, look, the Gemara said Bishul Mefapeah. The Gemara said that if there was an item of food on one part of the Kli, I have to assume that it spreads throughout. So he said, that's your answer. Ravan says, that's how he paskin, Bishul Mefapeah. And therefore what? So you have to be careful. Other Rishon also quote this, but even though the Beis Yosef doesn't begin the Ravan, I think the Ravan is a good place to start. Ravan says that that means, let's say I have a pot, a hot fleshic pot on the fire, and some milk spritzes on it. It's easier to talk about a hot pot, because if the pot's cold, it's just hot milk spray in a cold pot, that already becomes an Irui case. Or a ilagav tatagavar. That may be limited anyways. Okay, so that's what Rishon was talking about. The pot itself is hot. The pot itself is al-gabi ha'esh. The kidera al-gabi ha'esh, a flesh of kidera, and some milk, I don't care if the milk's hot or cold, because we pass on the tatagavar, some milk spritzes on a boiling hot pot. Boiling hot flesh of pot. Gval, so now what? So Ravan said, look, bishul mifapeah. So that means the milk spreads. It's not just going to stay there. I mean, whatever residue there is, you're going to clean up. In terms of the flavor, we don't just assume that it got absorbed in that one spot. We assume it's going to spread sideways. After it hits, it's going to spread sideways. Bishul Mefapeah. So the Ravan takes what's probably the simplest approach to Bishul Mefapeah. He says, so should I be worried? He says, well, it depends. Is there... how big was the drop of milk and how big is the pan? If the pan, the volume of the pan, the shishim, can egg the drop of milk, so you're good. Because the milk got nisbato. The milk got nisbato and all the other blias that are already in the pan. But if the pan is not 60 times as large as the drop of milk, so then you got a problem. Bishul Mefapeah, it's going to spread throughout. So let's figure out. So this is the same as what we had at the beginning of Tzadi Beis. Same as the Mishnah of Tipas Cholav. The drop of milk falls in the Chaticha. So you have to, when it falls in the Chaticha, you assume at the very least it spreads throughout the Chaticha. Again, discussion, sometimes maybe even spreads through all the Chatichas in the Kedera. And Machlokes Rashi and Tosas, how deeply it has to be submerged. But forget about that. Certainly it spreads through the Chaticha. So it's the same thing. The Gemara in Zachim says Bishul Mefapeah by the Kli. It's okay. So the drop of milk falling in the Kli is like the drop of milk falling in the Chaticha. Okay. It falls, it spreads. Good. So that is the position of the Ra'avan. Now the Maharam already makes it a little more complicated. Let's take a look, Shulchan Aruch. Let's open a Shulchan Aruch, Sif Hei. Simen Tzadi Dei Sif Hei. Let's see where this takes us. Tipas Cholav Shenafa Al HaKedera She'etzal HaEsh Mi Bachutz. So that's the stage is set.
I have a pot that's on the fire, a pot that's etzel ha'esh, al gabei ha'esh, we would often say, and the tipas challah falls on the pot from the outside. In other words, this is a fleishik pot, obviously a milchik pot, we're all good. That wouldn't be exciting. A fleishik pot, the chicken soup is on the fire, and this is a Friday afternoon challah. If there are people at home who take their Friday lunch very seriously, and let's imagine, hypothetically speaking, maybe some kids came back from school and they're hungry for lunch, and the Friday dach, you can have lunch at home because it's not a full day of school. So you come home, and now it's time to make Spanish omelet. We were discussing last time whether these scrambled eggs are milchik or not. Again, if the scrambled eggs are parv, that's not exciting. No shayla. The scrambled eggs are milchik. Scrambled eggs are milchik. The Spanish omelet is milchik. And of course, we're one person in the house. We won't specify a particular age or a particular age range, but one person in the house needs to make their scrambled eggs and cheese in the pan. But it's also Friday afternoon, which also means there's a pot of chicken soup on the fire on the same stovetop. So this is why you want to coat your chicken soup pot with foil, because otherwise you're going to have this. Otherwise you have your filet chicken pot, it's on the fire, it's hot, and then meanwhile here comes a splatter of milchiks from the other side of the stove, from the pan. So now what? Imnafla, okay. So let's skip around a little bit, now that the stage is set. The Shulchan Aruch goes on, based on the smock, to differentiate, so break the cases down. Let's skip a couple lines down, and then we'll come back to case number one. Im nafla kaneh b'makam ha'reikan, v'hi mefapa'as b'dofen ha'kedera ad samach l'rota. If it fell in the empty spot, so then we have to be worried that maybe it's spread. And maybe it's spread, and then it's going to make everything usser. Why is it making everything usser? So this is what this is rooted in the thinking of the Maharam. The Maharam says, the Maharam quotes, Rami Rutenberg was the very end of the period of the Bali Atos. Rami Rutenberg was the Rebbe of the Rosh of the Mordechai. He's operating in the 1300s, late 1200s, coming at the end of the period of the Bali Atosis. He quotes from the earlier Bali Atosis, the Rebbeinu Shimshon, Shimshon Mishantz, one of the great Talmidim of the Ri. Tshuva Yehre Shimshon Mishantz, the name of the Ri, so he said, it's not so pashut. The Re said, we look at this Gemara and you say, the last line of the Gemara is funny. Right? The Gemara said, Rav Rachama gave a kula. You only have to do Mirka Shtifin part of the kli. Right? Based on the comparison, based on an analogy to Dan, the Mishnah Badam Chantas, you only have to clean the Makam Adam. So the Talmud, Yitzhak Yehuda, says, I have two kashas on you. Number one, Misvar. Number two, it's against the Braisa. So he says, okay, Itani. I have a Braisa, so I'm wrong. And then the Gemara ends with that, the time of mind. What's the reason? The reason is a Pasuk. The question is, what is the reason is a Pasuk? I said, you gave me a Svar before. Why are you asking the time of mind? We said, Bishul Mefapea. That's the reason. The Dam doesn't spread. The Bishul spreads. What did that do? A Xeris HaKasuf? What type of... Understand? Is Xeris HaKasuf telling me that Bishul Mefapea? I have a drasha to tell me? Maybe. So the Re said, we're not sure. Is the drasha being Magal and the Torah is telling me that you should know this is how flavors work in a pot? Or no? The time of mind means, Ritzik Behuda was saying, maybe Bishul Mefapea. You're giving me a svara that we should compare it. I'll tell you, maybe it's not such a good svara. I don't know. Maybe Bishul Mefapea. Maybe not. I have no idea. But at the end of the and all the dust settles at the end of the sugya, it's based on a drasha. It's based on a drasha means not that, like we were saying before, mikvah shtif was more than just kashering. After all, you're rinsing cold water also, and you're doing a dafka in the base hamikdash. It's a mitzvah. So it could be you darshan from the pasuk. This is the way you do the mitzvah. The way you do the mitzvah is you have to do the whole kli, just like atfilas kalim. Also, you have to do the whole kli. It's a mitzvah. So the Ri wasn't sure. What's the maskanas hasugya? Bishul is mefapeh. Bishul is not mefapeh. Not so clear. So Maram took it a step further and said, and again, the Ri maybe himself already saying this. There's also a middle ground. Maybe it's mefapeh somehow. We're not sure if it's mefapeh. This is all one big black box. So Rob said, you got to be worried about the worst case scenario. What's the worst case scenario? The worst case scenario, because the Ravona said, look, it spreads. So spreading could be a kula. If it's spreading through a whole big pot, and the pot is a volume of 100, 200, 300 times as much as a drop of milk, so then you're good. Like the tipas chalfo and the chaticha. Maram says, based on this Ri, he says, we're not so sure. We know that if a drop of milk falls in a chaticha, it spreads throughout. Small chaticha, so the whole chaticha is aser. Big chaticha, the whole chaticha is mutter. But Maram says, by the Bishul Mefapeh, we're not sure. Bishul is Mefapeh, it's not Mefapeh. The Pasuk Zeh is being Megal of the Metzias, or Pasuk Zeh is a Kasav, which indicates the Metzias is the opposite. So Maram says, you got to go for the worst case scenario. Maybe it's Mefapeh, if it's a big pot, if it's a small pot, you got to be worried to spread throughout the whole thing. Okay. But let's say it's a big pot. So he says, you can't be Mekal Agaravan, oh, it spread through the whole Kli, therefore it's Mutter. No, maybe it spreads partially. That would be, if you're optimizing or de-optimizing, whatever, the worst case scenario is it spreads through 59 times as much. So it's all still aser. And then you come back to our context. Then the Maram says, and then you say Hanan. Maybe the milk hits the pot and spreads out. Okay, so now it asered almost 60 times as much. Maram says, then you got to be worried, maybe you should say Hanan. Ooh. So then, because this is all, it's a little bit of milk being nivla into all the fleisha kablias in the fleisha kapat. So now I just got a volume of 60 drops. The one drop of milk and the 59 drops worth of blias. And then, on the other side, it's convenient that we have, thank you for bringing this plastic sheet, right? So the milk came from here, and now a chunk of the kli is bas b'chal. And then all the chicken soup on the other side is now not just up against one drop of milk, it's up against the volume of 60 drops of a trefa piece of the pot wall. Because maybe it's mifapea a little bit. Not through the whole kli, but not nothing. Up to 59 times its volume. So that now I need, now I'm going to need not just shishim in the soup connected to the drop of milk, I need shishim squared. Because I already have 60 drops worth between the one drop of milk and another 59 drops worth of bulius in the pot. So it's 60 drops of treif, 60 drops of bas b'chalv. Now I need 60 times 60, 3,600 drops of chicken soup.
Where did the Maram get the idea that it spread 60 times its point? Like that part. Where does the Maram get it spreads 60 times the small drop amount to get this.
That's because again he tells you, look at this. I have a tshuva of the Rashi Mishnah, which I wrote. He copied it over and sent it to his Rebbe, and that's what he quotes in the tshuva's Maram. The Mordechai quotes, there's a lot of quoting. The Mordechai in the back of Chulin quotes his Rebbe, the Maram. He says, here's the language of my Rebbe's tshuva, and in the tshuva's Maram, Maram says, I copied the following tshuva to my Rebbe. And here, and he says, and here is the tshuva. It's the tshuva of the Rashi Mishnas. The Rashi Mishnas in turn is quoting his Rebbe, the Ri. So a lot of talk about chain of Masorah.
I understand once you get the 60, you have to have 60 times 60 to.
But how do you know? No, so again, it's all because the Ri said, the Ri Baal Tos pointed out that Gemara in Tzadivav and Beis and Zvachim, it leaves it very ambiguous. Is Bishul Mefapeah? Is Bishul not Mefapeah? So what the Maram draws from all that, again, it's already rooted in the Ri, is that we have to be worried by the worst case scenario. Maybe Bishul is Mefepeya, maybe it's not Mefepeya, maybe it's Mefepeya somewhat. In other words, the Ravon was assuming it's Mefepeya, and Mefepeya the whole Kli, automatically, just like Tipus Chalva and Chaticha. Maram said, I don't know, maybe it's Mefepeya, maybe it's not, and maybe it's Mefepeya a little bit. So Maram said, you got to be worried about all, in any given situation, you have to look at all the scenarios, you have to be machmer for all the scenarios. So the worst case scenario, what it be spreads is that the milk is mifapea within the dofen akli as much as it can, but stopping just short of sheer bittel. If it's mifapea to 70 times its volume, then it's vata, then nothing's awesome. It's mifapea 20 times its volume, okay, now you have 21 drops that are awesome. So maybe it's mifapea mamish 59 drops worth. Maybe. If it's mifapea any more than that, everything's mutter. But mifapea up until that, so whatever wherever it spread, it became trafe. And Hanan, it's a drop of milk mixed into bleas of basa. So then the whole thing, and you don't even need to come onto Hanan Bashar's room. This is the real Hanan Basa B'chav.
So then, based on that, would chicken soup not be a problem at all? Because then you're doing a Darabanan to a Darabanan. The 60 is such a Darabanan. It has to be a meat soup. It can't be a chicken.
Well, we do say Hanan and Basa B'chav Darabanan also.
I know, but now you're saying is the math you're being is, well, maybe it goes 59, because it can't be 60, because then it would be bought up. But that's a maybe. But then you're saying is, and then maybe chicken is also a problem. So then, this chicken soup, maybe you're not even a problem to begin with.
I'm not sure. I don't know. That's an interesting point. I don't remember. You got to look carefully. I don't remember offhand the notes that Kayla make that point. It is an interesting question. And I think you're touching on a larger point, which is this is mamish a big chumrah. In other words, if you're going to say we're not sure how much it spreads, so there's a whole host of possibilities. The fact that let's say there's 3,000 times as much chicken soup in the pot as there is that one drop of milk. So what are the chances that it spread just the right amount? Right? Very, very slender.
Even
in a daraisa,
splattered, and your salt splattered. You went and wiped it off right away. It seems like that should make a difference too in how, how long it stays to be bowl.
Maybe. So let's come back to that point soon. So again, the Maharam is of the opinion that I have to be choshesh for partial papua or piapua, and that you're then going to say chana. Now, but that idea does get limited somewhat. Number one, as the Beis Yosef quotes from the Smak, Moshe Mikutzi, the Smak said that yes, but it depends where on the pot it hit. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch here is quoting. I think the best way to put it is a combination of the Maram and the Smak. Because the Smak says, look, and he makes a point that we'll return back to once we go through Shulchan Aruch, we'll see actually has a lot of impact on a different, far more common, industrial kasher situation. He says, look, the Smak says, look, it depends if it fell on the top or on the bottom. By which I mean, if the chicken soup is, let's say the pot is 3/4 full. So did the splatter hit the bottom 3/4 where there's chicken soup directly on the side of the wall? Or did the splatter hit the top quarter of the side wall and the other side, in the opposite, the empty space? And why does that matter? So that's what the Smak says. Look, he says, this idea that it's going to settle, it's going to spread to the side, then there's Hanan. Hanan means there's two steps. That was sort of the ABCs of Hanan. Going back to the Mishnah, right? If the milk settles into the first chaticha, and then only later the chaticha falls into the pot, that's when you say chanan. If it spreads right away, right? So same thing here. If the milk hits the bottom 3/4, keneged harote, that's the language that's used. If the milk hits, and there's a lower part of the sidewall of the pot where there's at a height where there's fluid on the inside. So then it's going to hit, and it'll go straight through. It's not a two-step process. It's the same as the drop of milk falling into the whole big container of basar. So it immediately spreads around the whole thing. If the whole thing is awesome, the whole thing is mutter. But it's a one-step procedure. That's what the smock says. The milk falls on the lower part of the side wall, keneged harotev. So then you just need shishim in the soup, keneged the tipa, because this is going straight in. He's the smock says if the milk hits the top part of the side wall, keneged harekan, then already, how do you have a two-step process? Because once again, working sort of with the Maram's thinking that we're not really sure exactly where and how much it's spreading. So let's imagine the worst case scenario. See, he says, I should have brought along a dry erase marker. So imagine that the soup goes until here, right? So, see, the bottom of this mask will denote the sea level. The level of the soup. Let me turn around the card for those who are zooming so you can see. So imagine the soup is yay high. Right? So the smock says, so if it falls, the drops fall over here, the bottom half of the pot. Well, it's going straight in. In other words, mimanav shach. Either the flavor can go through or can't go through. But if it can go through, it's going to go through right away. Because there's nothing is precipitating more travel later. It's not like it fell in this, and then after they added the soup. If it's going through, it's going through. Like the milk falls on the piece of flesh, it spreads through the whole piece of flesh right away. If subsequently the piece falls into a big pot, so at that point, then it's respreading. Say, that's what my response is. If a drop falls on the upper half, so then, worst case scenario is that it spread to less than shishim and stopped short of the fluid line.
Why should it spread any differently at the top than at the bottom? It's the same material.
But the point is, there's nothing. This is empty. So if it's going to spread, it'll spread and it stops, and that's it. And here's the point: it has not yet made contact with the soup. The soup is down here, and the spread of the milk is over here. So far, nothing's become, the soup is fine. The flavor's up here, and the soup's down here. And if you would just wait, so far everything is kosher. They say if you stick a straw into the soup and start slurping the soup, so then it's still kosher. They didn't have, straws weren't so common. So The smock says, I think it's the smock says, you know, what one solution would be, because of the smock, you could drill a hole on the bottom of the pot and start draining out the soup, and meanwhile the milchik flavor is up top and the soup is just going to go down, it's never going to touch, and you're all good. The smock says it's not so practical, number one, because you destroy a pot, and number two, because, you know, the process of drilling a hole in the pot is going to shake the pot a little bit. So you're not going to be able to control. You're not going to control it. A straw would be easier. Okay. Or let it cool. The transfer of flavor is because it's hot. Turn off the fire. If you worry that there's some tam chalav in the upper half of the pot wall, and meanwhile the soup is all down below, turn off the fire, let everything cool off. And once everything cools off, you're all good. Let's take a look in the Shulchan Aruch. Let's take a look back in, again, Sim and Sadi Beis. Sif Hey, now we're ready to read the Sif straight. Tipas chalav shenafa kedeir she'itzel eish mechutz. Right, you have the milchik, a drop of milk flies out of your pan of milchik scrambled eggs, hits the side of the chicken soup pot from the outside. Not doesn't go into the pot, hits the outside of the pot. Enough looking at a top shield, if it fell on the lower part of the side wall where there's soup on the other side of the wall, directly on the side of the wall. Ain't tarchel a shishim, we can get a tipa. All you need is 60 times as much soup as the drop, because what you're concerned about is that it's penetrating through the pot wall. So if it's doing that, going straight into the soup, you have shishim in the soup, connected the teapot, you're good. You're good. But it should be noted, the Shach points out, recognize the pot is still treif, because the pot still got some milchings in it. But the soup is kosher, because if the milk penetrated into the soup, it would become a bottle right away. Okay. But the Shulchan goes on to say, Nafal Makam Areka, and if the milk splattered on the upper part of the sidewall of the pot, so then this is where the Smach said, now we're going to be worried about what the Maharam spoke about. Because then we have to be worried if it fell connected to Arakan, he mifapas, it might be mifa'apeya, but dofen hakadera ad samach lerotev. Kol kach she'en shishmi negatipa. Perhaps, worst case scenario is, number one, it spread, but not so far that it was touching the soup. So that initially, it did not make contact with the soup. And therefore, wasn't the spotlight of the soup. And number two, maybe it spread only to the extent that it's not batal b'shish, like we were saying before. Maybe it spreads up to 59 times its volume, and in such a shape that it's not touching the soup, where the area where the soup is. So then, that's the worst case scenario. So then, what happens? Why is the worst case scenario? That piece, that chunk of the pot wall is now treif, because it's milch and flesh sticks together. Doesn't yet impact the soup. If I'm then going to tip the pot and pour the soup out over that part of treif, the pot wall, then the soup is going to become treif. Why? Because again, as the Maharam said, you need shisha, shishim, pam, shishim. And that's what the Shach points out, Sivkat and Chaf. He says, the Shulchan didn't say beferish, if you have 60 times 60 as much as good, but that's the understanding. You got to do the math. What's the usual volume of a pot? How many quarts does it hold? And is that 3,600 times as much as a drop? The Shach says, we're assuming usually you're not going to have shishim pam shishim. Usually the volume of the pot, of the shikin zu pot, is not going to be more than 3,600 drops. If it is, okay. If it is, then you're fine. Usually it's not. That's what Shach is saying. Typically, that you have this piece of treif, a pot wall, where we're theorizing, maybe there's a piece, maybe the tipu was mifapeh such that it created a piece of treif, a pot wall, on the upper half of the upper part of the wall. It's not batal b'shishim, and it's not touching the soup. If you're subsequently going to pour the soup over, now you have chana, now you have a two-step procedure. First, the drop spread in the part of the wall, and then a minute later, you tipped it over after this piece became treif, that piece of pot wall, and then the soup touches it. That's the problem. And that's why, again, one solution is do the math and see if you have shishim squared. Do you have 3,600 times as much soup as a drop? That's one solution. Another solution, Shulchan Aruch says, zet hakanasa, coming from the smak, yanechena kach lo yigav ashit tzanein. Turn off the fire, or keep the fire going, and make... let it cool off before you take any soup out. Okay. And then the Shach and Sivkan Chafalov mentions what the Beis Yosef quotes. That in theory, there should be a third solution, which is Smach quote, which is drill a hole in the bottom, but it's not very practical. And that's why he says another solution I could have thought of, also not we wouldn't want to use, is pour out the other side. That's also not a good idea. It may splash. But the truth is, with a straw, again, who's drinking hot soup? With a straw, and also, it may be the same issue.
Soup ladle, pour, take it out.
Yeah, so why didn't they talk about the ladles? I definitely had.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure.
Why couldn't you just put the soup ladle?
Unless they're also worried about na'anua. In other words, because...
Here's the thing.
It's clear in the Beis Yosef. We're theorizing worst case scenario. So if the soup levels up till here, We're saying, you know, yeah, maybe it's spread like a strip, maybe it's spread like a strip. No, maybe it's spread till mamish, like, you know, a centimeter above the soup level. So, in that worst case scenario, a drop, then the slightest tilt could be a problem. See, even like, when you put in the ladle, the soup level moves a little bit. Especially if you put it in a little abruptly, it's going to make it ripple like a splash. That's what it sounds like. Just wait. Just be patient. Turn off the fire and just let it cool off. And get busy with something else and come back in a half hour. Come back in an hour. Come back in 2 hours. However long it's going to take for the soup to cool down, just leave it alone. Just don't touch it until it's cold. Just like sometimes when you have other types of kitchen bas bechal of mishaps, so usually you want to make sure, you know, Hippocratic approach, you know, do no harm. And the first thing, we have doctors here. The first thing you do is sometimes people make it worse by you want to clean everything off, and then you put it into hot water to clean it. Now you just made things worse, right? So either leave it as is or clean in cold water, but don't make things worse. So that's what the Shach quotes, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Smak. Just stop. Just stop. Let everything cool down and don't move anything. You may be okay. We might be okay as is. If you leave it, again, this is all the case of Keneged Hareka. All in the case of Keneged Hareka. And Keneged Male, so we follow the Smak's Kula, the Keneged Male is going to go straight through. It should be noted, the Ramah goes on to say in Sif Hei, this is sort of part of our build-up before, the whole concern of the Shishim Pam Shishim is again, that we're worried that the milk, the drop of milk, was asering and chananing the pre-existing blias of fleshik in the pot. Remember how we started? The Ramah in Sif Dalet says there's no chanan on the actual pot wall. What you could have, Maram is talking about, is chanan on the blias already in the pot. That's why the Ramah Sif Hei says this whole discussion is only if this is a well-used, well-worn pot. If this is the first time you're using this pot, so then it doesn't have any blias in it yet. And maybe some of the soup, but that's live, and that's so manavshach, and the soup was nivla, so then the drop would nivla down. So if this is the first time you're using the pot, then there's no chanan consideration. But if it's been used in the past, so then already you have this chanan consideration. Yeah.
What was the Ramah thing with the spoon? The Sadi Ches Gabi Kaf. What was that?
No, he says if you look in Simon Sadi Ches, the first Simon in Hilchos Taruvis, so he has the same logic that the Masharin Bekule was talking before. Masharin Bekule is only if it's already been used. If I only use this Kli once, and I know they only use it for kazayas of food, so I know there's only kazayas of blias in the. And I take a ladle, take a milk of glass, stick it into a pot of chicken soup. So do have to have? One question is going to be is the ladle ben yomo? But another question is going to be is the ladle batel b'shishim to the soup? So is what batel b'shishim to the soup? So it depends. If the ladle is used many times, you need shishim connected to the whole ladle. Or at least the whole part that got stuck in. But if you only used it once, it's a kaf chadasha, I know I only used it once for milchiks, and it was a kazayas of milchiks, and I only need shishim can I get the kazayas. That's what he's saying. Look later on, tzarihes, the discussion about the kaf, he also has a similar distinction between chadasha and yeshana in terms of whether you worry about other blias within or not. Okay.
So what was the Shach's problem with that? What's the Shach's, we didn't understand, what's the Shach's question problem on the Ramah using comparing the Kaf and the Kara and the Kedera, I mean.
So he doesn't like it because he says, what do you mean? The Shach says, but right now, let's say you haven't used a pot for chicken soup before, but you've been using it for the last 20 minutes for chicken soup. So maybe over the last 20 minutes, the flavor already spread. So the, Right now it's already. Mm-hmm. Now, over there, the kaf was used once in the past for milchiks. It's not in contact with milchiks now. So it's not getting milchik now. But here, what do you mean? The soup is there. So maybe it spreads throughout the whole thing.
So meaning the kadeira can't be considered really a new pot.
Right, because it's
already used.
You use it right now.
Okay.
And again, but as I was saying before, the pushback could be to defend the Ramah. It might be, yeah, but Manavshach, if you think that the flavor is shooting up from the soup, then you should assume that the flavor of the milk is going down. Okay, maybe not. It's hard to know. Again, should I assume everything's operating the same way? Okay, that's what the Shach says. He's not so happy with this cool of the Ramah.
This is Paras Ben Yom.
Yes, that's another point, right. This is only going to happen also, correct. And that's the very end of the Shach and Sus of Katan Chav Beis. If you're going to say that only if it's a Kedera Yeshana, then that's specifically Yeshana Bas Yoma. Because Yeshana Sheina Bas Yoma is no better than Chadasha. All the old Blias are irrelevant. Right. Then where do we go from here? So then there are just, then in terms of Halacha Lamaisa, over the course of Sivvav and Sivzayin only Shulchan Aruch, Ramah and Sivzayin is other topics, they say, well, Lakan Lakan. Generally, Ramachmir, but two important kulas. Number one, Shulchan Aruch says Sivvav, generally Ramachmir. Nova Omlesik Shnafel Adofen Shlok Kenegan Arotev. If it fell Kenegan Arekan, we are Mach, the practices to Machmir. But with two conditions. Now the Shach understood that the Rav Shulchan Aruch was saying our minig is not to rely on sinun, not to use that solution of shiyanichan shiyitstanein. And that's the Shach says. What do you mean? The Trumas Hadeshin was a great buck in the Minhagim. Maybe Nagu. Trumas Hadeshin was a great buck in the Minhagim. He said we do use sinun. Okay, that's the Shach of Katan Chavdal. The Taz and Sivka and Chav seem to say, no, that's exactly what the Shulchan Aruch means. Also, he just meant, we are Machmir for the Maram and the Smak. If it's Keneged HaReikon, we are worried about the Shishin Parham Shishin. Okay, and there we said before, if you do Tzinon, it'll be fine. Okay, so Halach L'mayis L'char, we do, we rely on Tzinon. And the point of the Shulchan Aruch, particularly according to Taz, is generally, the Minig is usually to Machmir like Maram, but here are two exceptions. Number one, over the course of Sivvav, he says, and this is something that according to Beis Yosef already, that if the drop fell connect, if it was a small amount, just a drop, and it fell right where the fire is, so then you assume it really got dried up. And we're not going to start worrying, well, maybe it spread, it dried up right away. Okay, it's number one. Connected to Eishas Mutter. And number two is the Shulchan Aruch and Siv Zayin says that Peshas HaTchach we're more willing to be made. Peshas HaTchach we're not going to be so worried about the Maram's maybe. And that's what the Yesh Mishamat is there, Ben Yechiel. Rabbi Yechiel, the Peshas HaTchach, the Erev Shabbos, even if it's Keneged HaReikon, and even if it's not Keneged HaEish, you don't have any of the coolest that we had before, still, Shishim is good enough. As Agra and others point out, that we're not going to apply Chanan. We're not going to apply Chanan. If you look, the Beis Yosef sent you a Trumas Hadeshin. It's a hard Trumas Hadeshin to read. It's the middle of a Shaila about something else, about you stuck the same milchik pot. Yeah, milchik spoon. You stuck into the fleishik pot. Stuck in twice, in and out and in. That's like going to mikveh or Rosh Hashanah a bunch of times. And you took the But the milchik is where you put it in the fleishiks and out. And in the fleishiks again and out. The same milchik that you kept, you weren't paying attention. Use the milchik ladle in the soup 5 times. And each shishim connect the ladle, or 5 times shishim connect the ladle. Shishim for each time. So that's the whole. In the midst of that, he starts talking about this rav. The Truman starts talking about this ravana and the case, the milk on the outside. It sounds like he's saying that we're not worried about Chanan. That we don't see this as a Chanan situation. We don't see this as a Chanan situation. Either it spread or it didn't spread. It's going, it's not going, we're not going to start assuming. Well, maybe it draw the worst case in here. No, you have Shishim, you're good. So again, so Lamaisa, under normal circumstances, or the normal circumstances, a tipa on the outside. So under normal circumstances, we're going to be machmir. Well, let's back up. If milk splatters on the outside of a fleishik pot, so it's bitul b'shishim will work if it falls keneged hamale, keneged harotet. If it falls keneged ha'esh, a tipa keneged ha'esh, you ignore it. If right where the fire is, it dries up right away. If it falls keneged ha, not keneged ha'esh, but keneged harotev, so then bitul b'shishim. If there's shishim, if it falls keneged harekan on the upper part of the wall where it's empty, so then if it's a shasat chak, it's batul b'shishim. If it's not a shasat chak, so then we're going to consider some part of the empty pot wall as treif, and you have to let it cool down before you take it out. So that's the sugya of the tipas chal of mi bachutz. It should be noted that there's a larger halacha lemasa point that's being driven here, and I'll just leave you with this. The milchik splatter comes up occasionally, but one part of the sugya comes up every day in industrial food production throughout the country and throughout the world. It's actually one of the more common issues in giving hashgacha on an industrial level in factories, and that is that the underlying assumption that we've shown him here is that flavor can penetrate through the wall of a pot from one side to the other. That's the whole premise of the whole conversation. It's not even so clear that the Gemara in Zvachim is saying that. Gemara in Zvachim wasn't totally going all the way through. The Gemara in Zvachim said you have the meat inside the pot. Did it spread, horizontally across? But the Rishonim, they're getting involved here. The Ri and the Rash, the Maram and the Smak, the Ravan, so they're all assuming that there could be penetration all the way through. So that's it comes up occasionally when there's stovetop splatter. It comes up all the time in canning plants, because the way food is canned typically is that you pack the food, the raw food, in the can. And with water, with a little bit of air space, head space, and it's sealed. And then the cans are put on the raw food in the can. The cans of raw food are put onto a conveyor belt, and the conveyor belt runs through a steam jacket. This is the most efficient way to cook it, is you have a sort of enclosed, the steam jacket is an enclosed space where there's superheated steam is circulating. There's a boiler down below. It's heating up the water, and it comes up super hot, and then it comes back down to get reheated. And so it's able to maintain a very high, consistent temperature in the steam jacket. Sort of like those old-fashioned toasters they sometimes have in yeshiva kitchens, where you have this conveyor belt, and the bread goes through, and you set the heat, and you set the time, how rapidly the conveyor belt goes will drive how long the bread is inside the heat. So you have these conveyor belts of cans running through the steam jackets. You could adjust the heat of the steam jacket. You could adjust the speed of the conveyor belt. So that will determine how long the cans cook. And that's why they're packed with water and with a little bit of headspace, so the water could expand. And it cooks in the can. Okay. So obviously, in order to give hashgacha on the canned food, you have to make sure whatever went into the can the ingredients are kosher. From this sugi, though, you see, it's not enough that way. And these cans are kosher. How about the previous run of cans? Very large food producers own their own canning facilities. But smaller food producers usually rent hours from a canning facility. If you're not big enough to be running your product 24/7, so you rent X number of hours a week to make runs of your product. So it's very nice you're doing canned tomatoes, but who was here before? So you rented, this tomato company rents 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Mondays. Great. But it's not enough to give a hashkacha to those canned tomatoes, low dye, to make sure that what's in the cans, that the tomato ingredients are kosher. I have to figure, well, what was being canned at 7 o'clock in the morning? Maybe they're doing clam juice. And that's not hypothetical. That actually happens. And that's actually one of the issues that differentiates the reliable hashkacha organizations from certain non-reliable hashkacha organizations is this very example of are you worried about the clam juice that they can 10 hours earlier, literally. So you could say, look, the clam juice isn't here. The clam juice is gone hours ago. They already packed out, literally. The clam company packed out already. What's the problem? The problem is that it's the same water that keeps getting circulated. It keeps being reboiled and reboiled and reboiled. It's the same water that was used in the morning for the clam juice, being used in the evening for the tomatoes. So, and since it's clear from all these Rishonim that we're concerned with the penetration of flavor all the way through from one side to the other side, that's a real problem. That's a real problem. So the way the kosher organizations deal with it, you could check to see what's been done since the water was changed. Alternatively, you could add a davar hapogim to the water. I believe the one they usually use is pine oil, because it apparently it gives a terrible taste even in very small amounts, and it does not interfere with the operation of the boiler and the steam jacket. So mainly, if you make sure that the water has, you add a little bit of davar hapogim when you show up, so then any flavor is going. From the moment that the tom clam goes into the cans of tomato, it's already going together with the pine oil. It's chil sabli l'fgam. That's why it is not a problem. Okay. Chavi yashkach. A lot going on in the Ramban Sif Zayin and in the Shulchan Aruch Ramban Sif Ches. We'll pick up with that Mirtz Hashem next time.